Welcome to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm Eddie Garcia, in for David Ford. We're going to kick off 2014 with a very special program featuring some of our greatest musical guests, all recorded live in Winston-Salem at WFDD's Studio A. First up, it's The Genuine. This Winston-Salem-based band has been garnering lots of well-deserved buzz around town, and we have an intense live performance, album cuts, and interview with associate producer Bethany Chafin. Then we shift gears, and David Ford takes us on a musical journey into the past with the beautiful sounds of violin, fiorbo, lute, oboe, and voice with Magnolia Baroque players Glenn Siebert, Ingrid Matthews, Deborah Nagy, and John Lenti. Then we close out today's show with my interview with local honky-tonk legends, the Bo Stevens. They tore through some tracks off their latest record, Your Crazy Heart, and then sat down for a fun, laughter-filled interview. If you love music, then you're going to love this show. So stick around, and we'll get rolling with The Genuine right after this news. Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm Eddie Garcia, in for David Ford. The Winston-Salem-based band The Genuine started when husband and wife Matthew and Caitlin Alevedo wrote their first song together called The Spinning. In August of 2012, they added to their finely blended voices by enlisting Devin Forkle on percussion during the recording of their first EP, Our Wood Grain Hearts. Then The Genuine grew again with the addition of Gunnar Nagel on guitar and vocals, and the band was complete. They released their first full-length record, Blooms, a few months back, and have been playing lots of concerts in support, most recently on New Year's Eve at the Garage in downtown Winston-Salem. Check WFDD.org for links to their website and upcoming performance dates. Last September, The Genuine came to WFDD to chat with associate producer Bethany Chafin and to play their heartfelt, emotional music live in Studio A.
My name is Devin Forkle. I play drums and percussion in The Genuine.
My name is Gunnar Nagel, and I play lead guitar, but also at times will play piano and sing.
Kate Brower, and I play the piano and I sing.
And my name is Matthew Alevedo, and I play acoustic guitar and sing and play piano on occasion as well.
The Genuine started sort of when you guys began collaborating, Matthew and Kate. And when was that? How long have you guys known each other?
We've known each other probably about 4 years. We became friends and then we started dating. And I've always sang with church and harmonies and stuff, actually, with Devin for most of my high school years. And then Matt has been singing forever. And we actually met at an open mic night, surprisingly.
Yeah, I've been singing since the beginning of time. We played at this coffee shop. It was in King. And we just kind of randomly bumped into one another. And one of my good friends, blues legend, Steve Wisniewski, he kind of nudged me on the shoulder. He said, "Hey, go look at that girl." And I was like, "All right." And then I kind of fell for her after that. But Katie and Devin have actually known each other all their lives. And then about 8 months ago, we met Gunnar here through a mutual like singing competition called the Winston-Salem Shuffle, and kind of joined the ranks and just clicked in our head. Like, we all play the same kind of music. We all love this origin of music, and why not? We're all good friends, and that was the main glue that held it all together, was being so close. And it's easy, you know, it's real simple to just kind of hang out with friends and write good music.
So what is it like, how did the dynamic change when you went from a duo to then a trio and then to a foursome?
I brought some songs to the table, just written myself, because Katie and I didn't start singing together until 2 years into our relationship, and then we started writing for that competition, which is very intimate. We really enjoy softer music. I'm a very sappy person.
Yeah, we were very quiet and mellow, so yeah, before they came along.
Adding Devin, and his musical background is all over the place. He's played in pretty much every kind of band, whether it be jazz or reggae or hip-hop. You know, he's done everything. He added kind of like an epicness to it and really put a great drive to it. And then adding the icing to the cake, Gunnar's the ambience and the just the fullness that he brings to it. And
yeah, he kind of pushed it over the edge and made it what it needed to be.
Mm-hmm. I remember one of the first sessions that we sat down together on, Matt, Kate, and myself. I started playing and I would see their faces kind of panic because what I was adding was not at all what they were expecting, and now it's kind of how we originate most of our songs.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun to scare them.
It was uncomfortable. At some points it was almost like it was foreign because I wasn't expecting the music to go there. But to be honest, I think that's what makes it what it is.
Well, yeah, we were used to being all quiet and angsty and acoustic singer-songwriter, and then Devin comes in and just knocks it out.
Cold is a fickle scope. He sets his sights on you and I. He tries to brush our sin.
Matthew was saying that you've played in all sorts of bands, and it seems like you could probably play anything as well, because in there I saw you, you took the music stand and you started using that as well, and it sounded great. Talk about kind of the different ways of doing percussion.
I guess my drumming career really started in college. I went to Pfeiffer University and I studied jazz. It was an environment for free thinking. All my professors encouraged that, and improvising and just being... having fun. And I think that playing the djembe, I do that quite often. It's very easy to move around as opposed to a drum set. And so the way I initially approached playing djembe was treating it as much like a drum set as possible, trying to find as many sounds as possible. And I think that I've achieved that. I'm constantly learning new ways to make sound, but I'm kind of all over the djembe. But it's fun to play. It's easy to move around. But drum kit is where I like to live.
Cool. The way I first found out about you guys was by watching a video I found on YouTube of you all covering Blood Buzz Ohio by The National. Mm-hmm. And you're playing the djembe, uh-huh. which is why I think of it. And you're playing in, is it Matthew's Tiny House?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the Tiny House movement, first of all, how you became involved in it, and then what it's like to bring music into that space.
Absolutely. It's one of the weirdest things you can live in, and everyone. I get two responses. I either get... that is so awesome, or you're a freak. And I love both of the responses. But I was 19, and I actually got accepted in the Hay School of Music at Appalachian, and I was on the cusp of either going to School of Music full-time or just trying to live life. And it just didn't really – I had a gut feeling, and my parents always taught me to just really trust your gut. And so – I didn't go to college, and I started building that house and literally just started working full time. All my cash and all my money that I made went straight into the home, so I paid it off completely. I really like the idea of not having any bills, because I feel like money is the root of everything that is evil. Yeah, so I wanted to live just scot-free and be able to give music a fighting chance. And it took me about a year and a half of building, and I learned everything from how to put T111 siding or just sheetrock or plumbing, electrical, but I messed everything up before I got it right. And I love it. You know, it's living beyond your means is something that nearly everyone does at some point in their life, and it's important to realize that there are a lot of people in this world, and it's just so much easier and less to clean up and so much less money to heat and cool a home. But playing music in there, it's fun. We actually recorded our first EP, the 5-song EP. Every instrument was recorded in that house. and it was recorded on one microphone.
We like going out in public, waiting for someone to say, you're just your gosh darn cute, you just make me want to puke, no seriously, go away, we get so tired of each other.
It was a trial and error, and I'm always confident in doing new things and just trying to push boundaries. And
we've learned to consolidate our space.
I think in that video you're playing the djembe. Are you sitting up on the thing when you're playing?
Gunner's
you're
on
sitting
it,
up
yeah.
on the I'm loft, so kind of had to, yeah.
I'm in the kitchen hallway, bathroom area.
Yeah. It's literally 8 feet wide and like 20 feet long, so it's not.
So tiny house, big music.
Yeah, I like that.
Gunner, what was that experience like? What was it like sitting up in the loft and playing in that space?
Well, yeah, we had, once again, that was a girl that we know runs a blog. What is it, Jukebox Heroes?
Yep, is
that
My Jukebox Heroes.
Mm-hmm. She does, but records bands doing unusual covers or, you know, where they take the music and kind of do it in their own way. But at one point, Devin was sitting up top, and that just wasn't quite jiving, so we kind of swapped around, had to swap guitars with Matt, because you have to just do all the levels by yourself, and it definitely was, it's strange and limiting, but at the same way, it's a challenge that feels good to rise to. But it's amazing to me what that EP sounds like in regard to the, you know, the materials they were painting with.
Yeah. So after the EP came your latest album, Blooms. Tell me a little bit about that process, what it was like to record it, and songwriting as well. That's something I'd like to hear your thoughts on.
A lot of the songs that are on Blooms we had already written, and they were on the EP, or there were some that we just kind of had floating around that we just wanted to perfect and re-record because, like Matt said, he's no producer. So we wanted to really...
Thanks, Kate. No offense.
So we really just wanted to do it right. So we collected those songs, and we even collaborated and wrote a couple new songs that we were really excited about that kind of seemed to be foreshadowing and what we're going to be writing in the future. So we're excited. We recorded at Greenhouse Studios, which is here in Winston. We felt like we were really putting our songs into the right hands. David Arnold kind of, he came down, he turned the knobs for us, and it was fun. We knocked it out in 2.5 days.
Yeah, I think we were in studio for maybe 30 hours.
Yeah, we just kind of camped out in
power
there.
Outage.
Mm-hmm. That was fun.
Oh, yeah, there was big storms going on around then, so the power kept going out, and we had all these things plugged in, and so it was kind of a nightmare, but we just kind of camped out there. And
I think that was probably my favorite part of the recording process, is that we showed up on Friday, or Thursday night, actually, you know, and we had clothes with us, and we had toothbrushes, and we set up drums, and we set up everything, and we recorded, ate, and slept all in this very livable studio.
Western Carolina, live in Studio A.
I don't see many bands where there are four songwriters. You know, all four of us are very keen on writing, and especially on the single Light of Love, nearly all of us, we contributed words and changes to every aspect. I mean, we would check each other, like, this is what I wrote, brought it to the table, and then, you know, the next person the same way. So it's really interesting to think that all four of us are very capable of writing and performing.
I feel very not limited to my role as a specifically a singer, guitarist, a pianist, whichever. I feel like we all have different ideas. I might have a percussion idea. I mean, we were all hanging out last night, and Devin was showing us a little recording on his phone that he had come up with a guitar part that he was interested in working on. It's bigger than just having a guitarist that writes the guitar parts and a pianist that writes the piano parts and a lyricist, and it's much more fluid than that.
You can hear the dynamic that you're describing because there's a lot of layering. There are times when, you know, individuals have solos or, you know, someone comes in over the next person, but then it all really weaves together really nicely. And so I like what you're saying about all of you being storytellers, all of you being musicians, all of you being lyricists. So one song that where the lyrics really sort of stood out to me because they were incredibly beautiful, they really did remind me of kind of like a mini fairy tale or something, is Violence Creek, because it almost has this like tiny epic quality to it. Tell me a little bit about that song.
That was a song that Katie and I wrote for that original songwriters competition. That was one of the first three, I think, we've ever written. Katie and I come from church backgrounds, and having God in my life is just like a huge staple, and I really like to pepper in things behind a very well-drawn picture. That song is very descriptive. We actually had an argument when we made that song.
We did.
Not as much of a writing sit down, hey, let's write a song. It's more like, I'm going to fight you while I put words on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
It works pretty well, and I think we've done that three or four times, but I literally started playing the piano riff, and I just keep playing it until I was like, all right, this chunk needs words, and then obviously when you start the ball rolling down the hill, it's easy.
I feel that with having two perspectives in the same song, it's very obvious from when I saw them sing and play by themselves that they are not just singing to the crowd, but they're singing to one another. And that remains one of the most interesting parts about this band, I feel like, is to be able to watch this couple sing these beautiful songs to each other. You can watch their faces and really tell that they're not, you know, worrying about, you know, the note that they're going to hit. They're thinking about these words, and, you know, it kind of even can cut them up inside because it's not always the brightest subject matter, but it's a very true performance, and that kind of raw emotional nature is really, really nice.
In a daze, I find you in a dream. You were bound by sticks.
The Genuine, live in Studio A. That interview was conducted by Triad Arts Associate Producer Bethany Chafin. You'll find links to The Genuine's website, their new album Blooms, and upcoming concert info at WFDD.org, and click on Triad Arts Weekend.
You're falling fast and quickly under as you wonder. I can feel it call me down like a thunder.
You're listening to Triad Arts Weekend, and I'm Eddie Garcia, in for David Ford. We're going to take a quick break now, and when we come back, we'll hurtle into the past, but land delicately on the sonic soliloquies of some terrific Baroque music, courtesy of a few of the Magnolia Baroque Festival's finest, when Triad Arts Weekend continues. Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm Eddie Garcia, in for David Ford. The Magnolia Baroque Festival is known for its musical and educational programming, as well as featuring world-renowned early music soloists. Lucky for us, some of these gifted players took the time to visit WFDD for a live performance in Studio A, and to have a conversation with David Ford. So here's tenor Glenn Siebert, violinist Ingrid Matthews, oboist Deborah Nagy, and theorbo and lute player John Lenti. Thank you.
the Chaconne in C by Lully. But when you finish a piece like that, what's the feeling like? I mean, I'm going to throw it your way, John. I've never seen the theorbo in action live like that. It's a very physical instrument. You're really invested in it. I mean, it was fun to watch and hear.
Oh, well, it's a lot of fun to play. I have a background in guitar, and, you know, you get accustomed to playing on smaller, you know, well, instruments that don't have like 10 inches worth of bridge to play. And so, you know, you get to cover a lot of real estate. And in something like this, where I'm the only bass line instrument, usually I'm sharing that duty with a harpsichord and a cello and other things. In this case, I get to play all these notes and, you know, figure out as best I can inventive ways of making it a satisfying musical texture. So it's, well, you said when we get to the end, how do we feel? Part of it is, whew, I managed to play most of the notes without a cello to help. But also it's great fun to be the one sort of holding it down, you know, to feel like I get to support the two melodic instruments.
Would you describe the dimensions of this? That's an amazing instrument just to look at. We're talking about a theorbo here.
Theorbo, yeah. The instrument is about 5 feet long. It's held in the lap like a guitar. It's got two ranks of strings. I've got short strings that are tuned in intervals kind of similar to a guitar or a lute. It's different, but more or less the same idea. I fret them, and I strum, and I pluck, just like I would, you know, whatever other instrument. And then it's got a second rank of strings that are twice as long as those, and they're tuned in a scale, so it's like I have the bass range of a harp tacked on to my lute. And that's actually exactly what they did initially. The earliest theorbos were conversion jobs. Like, they took a big lute. The lute usually has that neck that bends back. And they sawed that off, and they glued on an extension with extra strings. And so what I have is an instrument with, you know, a wonderful, rich bass range. And the harmony. So, like, I don't have to fret those low strings. They're just tuned in a scale. So I only, you know, I just play them with the thumb of my right hand, and that frees up my fingers and my right hand and then the left hand to make the harmony up above.
You've got a lute on steroids.
Lute on steroids, yeah. Or a lute and a garden rake that had a baby, you know. Like, there are a lot of different things that people compare it to.
I'm looking over your shoulder here looking at the music. I mean, this is like a sometimes jazz piano player at home where we have the real book and just a chord symbol and maybe a melody. That's what you're working on here. I'm hearing all these amazing sounds, and I know you're not winging it. It's all based on a system and a tradition, but talk about what you've got before you and how you're turning that into these glorious kind of symphonic sounds.
Okay, well, what I have in front of me is just a bass line. It's just a single melodic line, and what I have written above some of the notes of the bass line are numbers. The numbers, we call them figures, and what they do is they indicate what the harmony is supposed to be. You work to a certain extent according to the key signature of the piece. Like, if I don't have anything written, then I just play kind of what makes sense. So it's a very freeing kind of notation just to have these figural suggestions above the bass line.
I want to get in some of the freedom then from a melodic sense too, Deborah, because I'm hearing just through the ornamentation and the nuance of what you're doing with Ingrid, that freedom, but I don't know how much of that is in an improvisatory sense or how much of it's written in from a melodic perspective.
Well, I think there is a lot of freedom. I hesitate to say improvisation, though there is some of that as well. Part of the freedom is rhythmic freedom. So, I mean, you're looking over my shoulder as well. My page is full of quarter notes and eighth notes. That doesn't really amount to very much interest-wise. But the French had a tradition of playing their eighth notes unequally, and there was a great flexibility. When I look at the page, I look at, you know, these quarter notes and eighth notes and maybe dotted quarter notes, and those tell me less about how I should play those individual notes so much as where the next note comes and what I might fit in between.
So you might see, for the non-musician out there listening, you might see a group of eighth notes, which traditionally would just be dot, 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 dot. But in a French sense, oftentimes that might be more lilting, or give me an example of that.
It could be da-da-ti-da-ta-da-ta, which had hopefully five or six different qualities of eighth note in that bar of eighth notes that you just sang.
And how do you get on the same page with Ingrid? Because you're playing a lot of these lines together, and how do you know that she's going to be taking that on the same way you are?
I mean, we come from a kind of a common knowledge base in terms of performance practice, but we're also good chamber musicians, and we're listening and responding and, you know, on the fly.
Well, I was really enjoying not only hearing you all play with, but the movement. I think seeing and hearing you all perform together it's so worthwhile because it somehow contemporizes it. I mean, there's this dance-like sense, there's this drive, there's this energy that I'm picking up on, and you're actually moving together many of the times. Ingrid, talk about the bringing out the dance in this Chaconne.
Well, I think bringing out the dance has a lot to do with what Deborah was talking about with the rhythm. That a chaconne is, you could say it's two things. It's a repetitive harmonic pattern, as John mentioned. It's based on four descending chords that repeat over and over. So that's one thing, but it's also a dance, and it needs to feel like a dance. And if we played all of the eighth notes and quarter notes very straight, it might not feel like a dance. So what Deborah's talking about, and you asked sort of how we decide or how we know exactly how we're going to vary the rhythm and put our slightly unequal spin on the eighth notes. It's all sort of organized around the strong downbeats, and the result of that is that it feels more dance-like.
Well, I want to talk about your instrument, but let's hear some more music first. I feel like a kid in a candy store. What's next on the program? We're hearing something from Caccini.
Yeah, Giulio Caccini was a singer-composer who really helped develop opera, and he had a style of singing as well that had a lot of freedom, just like the Lully. And he called it sprezzatura, and that was a kind of casualness of rhythm that you were to bring to the music.
Sprezzatura.
Sprezzatura.
Sprezzatura. And last year it was trillo. We always get a new word out of you.
You know, I'll do a trillo for you too.
Will you do a trillo? Just for me. This is a dedicated trillo. Yeah. And I should say, this is Glenn Siebert, fine tenor and founder director of Magnolia Baroque Festival. Here is... What's the title of this ditty?
Amarilli mia bella. Amaryllis, my sweetie.
Live from Studio A. Glenn Seward. He'll be accompanied on the Theorbo by John Lenti.
Amarilli mia bella. Non credi del mio amore. Ti morta sale, tu vitar non dirà. Apri il vetro e vedrai scritto in
Magnolia Baroque Festival players Glenn Siebert, Ingrid Matthews, Deborah Nagy, and John Lenti live in Studio A and interviewed by David Ford. Check WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend for updated info on Magnolia Baroque and where else you might catch these musicians in the meantime. Thank you.
We need to take one more short break, but when we come back, it's time for Winston-Salem's Kings and Queens of Real Country Music, the Bo Stevens. They'll be live in Studio A and in conversation with me in a mere 60 seconds when Triad Arts Weekend continues. Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm Eddie Garcia, in for David Ford. The Bo Stevens have been bringing energetic, honest, heartbreaking, and spirit-lifting honky-tonk music to Triad audiences and well beyond since 2004. They've got four full-length albums under their belts, and the latest is Your Crazy Heart. The Bo Stevens stopped by WFDD to lay down some tracks and have some serious laughs with me live in Studio A.
We were loving all the time, and that loving, it was so dang fine. That baby was mine. My baby got gone. My baby got gone. Left me here alone. My baby got gone. You know, we went to a big to do. Doggone blue. You left with somebody new. My baby got gone. My baby got gone. My baby got gone. You left me here alone. My baby got gone. Took the dog and the well, and they can both go straight to the well. My baby got gone. My baby got gone. My baby got gone. Left me here alone. My baby got gone. Now I'm crying all alone. My baby got gone.
So you recorded your first album, I guess, in 2003 or 2004. You recorded with Doug Williams at Electromagnetic Radiation Recorders.
Yeah, we've all of our CDs have been recorded there, and we really enjoy how he works and how he makes us sound good.
What keeps you going back? It's your fourth record, and you've recorded every record with Doug. What is it about recording with him or recording there?
There's a real comfort level that we have there, and we like the way he's not afraid to tell us when we're not doing well. But he does it in a way that doesn't, you know, step on all of our egos. I think we come out shining on the other end because of him. A great deal of it is because of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're still playing some of those songs from the first recording session, like today?
Yeah.
Played My Baby Got Gone?
Yeah. That strange. That song was a joke. I wrote it never expecting it to be played, actually. But it has become the song that everybody really knows us from. And, we've done a couple of shows without playing it, and people go, oh, man, I wish you'd have played Baby Got Gone. And so, there's rarely a show that we won't play that because people just, for some reason, it sticks in their head. Yeah. It's a little earworm, and they like it for some reason. So,
you guys, you tour some. You have kind of a regional circuit going on.
Yeah, we do.
For your style of music, what is that like, the booking shows and kind of going out there and the venues? And
it's great. There's a really hardcore audience that love the old country music and also are just adamant about hating the new country music, which we're all in agreement with them. And it sort of blends with the rockabilly crowd. It blends with so many different types of music. And I think it's something about the pureness of the music that people connect with.
The label country music, the music it's applied to today, I kind of wanted to get your feelings on that.
I don't think it's country music. I think it's pop music with some fiddles put in it.
Yeah.
And to me, everything sounds the same. And some people may say that about old country, but I heard somebody say the other day, back in the old days, if Merle Haggard came on the radio, you knew it was Merle Haggard. If George Jones came on the radio, you knew it was George Jones. These days, a lot of the country singers sound exactly the same. And their songs are very formulaic as well. And, you know, it's sad that that's happening. And also it's sad that I was thinking the other day when George Jones passed away, we're really losing a lot of the older country without anybody really replacing them because Nashville won't allow that music to be played. And that's a sad thing. I think it's a loss. And I'm glad that there are bands like us, like John Howie Jr. and the Rosewood Bluff. There's a lot of bands out there that are doing it, Del Watson, but they're not going to ever, you know, they're not getting the airplay. They're not getting the attention.
Do you feel a lot of camaraderie, though, with, yes, with these bands?
Yes, I do. I do. And
yeah, it's an us against them mentality.
It really is.
Are there any other things you do to kind of work together to help to spread the word or anything organized?
Well, we do like the Cash Bash every year.
And what's that?
That's it's a Johnny Cash birthday tribute that we do in February. And we've done that for the past
11 years.
Yeah, 11 years I've been booking that. And the nice thing about that is that I'm able to put on some people that are like-minded. But I also, nicely enough, can put on some bands that are a little more rock and roll minded as well. And but they still have the same mentality of we respect the music that came before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the greatest night. Two couple nights of music. I just love it because it's, like I said, it's just a mix of people that respect what Johnny Cash did.
Yeah. And respect music.
And respect music.
And I guess that's something I wanted to ask. I mean, what is it about the Bo Stevens that you reach across genres, not only with audience, but with the type of bands you play with? I mean, what is it? What's the secret?
You tell us. I'm not sure.
It's been a lot of Bo Stevens shows where I've had people come up to me and they'll say, you know, I really don't like country music, but I love you guys. Like, so there is some kind of magic element. Maybe it's in the stage chemistry. Also, the songwriting, it's very earthy and universal. It speaks to a lot of people.
I want to add one other thing. Richard is a phenomenal frontman. He connects with the audience. He has a great time while he's doing it. Even though I'm sitting miserably next to him, even I can piece together at least a little bit of fun. I don't know many musicians who can connect with an audience like you, surprisingly.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun.
That's surprising. It's surprising that you said that.
Now I want my $5.
Okay. You're crazy, huh? It's killing me. And you're crazy, huh? It's thrilling me. You play. You're crazy, huh? Don't believe you, they say, but they just can't see how your wandering eyes and charming ways make a fool. Thank you.
have great time until I fall apart.
I came into this very late in life. You know, most people are in bands in their, you know, when they're in high school. My first band was the Bo Stevens, you know, and that was when I was 32, something like that. You see, as you get older, you forget ages.
It's convenient.
Yes, it is. And so, in any case, maybe that's it. Maybe there's part of me that just says, you know, you're duping people. I'm happy to be surrounded by people who enjoy playing the music that I want to play. Because yeah. I couldn't be I'm not a rock band guy. I'm not a rock star. I'm not a guy who could be in a metal band. This is exactly the kind of music that I need to play. And I'm just happy that there are really good musicians and good people that want to play it with me.
Yeah.
And I count myself very lucky every day.
Since you've been gone, I found a better way of living. Without worries, without lies, without fear. And someday you're gonna get what you've been given. And you'll see just how I've felt for all these years. Walking out was the best thing you've ever done for me. I know this beyond a shadow of a doubt. And the one thing thought made life worth living. Well, that's the one thing I can't live without. Since you've been gone, I found a better way of living. Without worries, without lies, without fear. And someday you're gonna get what you've been given. And you'll see just how I've felt for all these years.
You guys have a new record out. What's it called?
Your Crazy Heart.
Your Crazy Heart.
From personal experience.
No, a lot of heartbreak, man.
You know, we do drinking and cheating songs.
And you guys are collaborating more on the writing now, maybe, than you had in the past. Right?
Yeah, we really did on this album, and hopefully in albums to come, because, you know, I think it really shows a difference. When you have other people writing besides me, because almost all the songs were co-written this time. I think the results were outstanding.
Let me ask you this. Do you collaborate on lyrics too?
Yeah, and mostly on lyrics.
Really?
Well, in the past, not so much on lyrics, but this time, yeah, we were collaborating a lot more on lyrics.
What is that like? You know, lyrics can be such a personal thing, yeah. Or a lot of times singers will kind of be guarded about it, you know, mm-hmm. to open up like that. And what's that experience like?
Well, I thought it was great. I think, like I said, we got a lot more flavor out of some of those songs. You know, instead of me just being holed up in my house writing a song, I brought it out, you know, to them and I think we got a better product for it.
I'm a long way from home, and the moon's hanging high in the sky, and the stars are all looking down at me on this day that I die. Without her, so hard to do.
alongside songs about drinking and despair. Every record you have a gospel song too.
Yeah.
So what's the story behind that?
It's about giving back, partially, and also if you look at a lot of the old country guys, gospel has always been a big part of country music. And if you look at a lot of the old country singers, most always they had a gospel song on one of their albums, you know, a sacred moment, you know. And to me, it just seemed like that's what had to happen on our albums. And so I early on said, you know, I don't want to do an album unless we do a sacred song on it. This one, to me, I call it my gospel protest song.
The song we're talking about
It's called Redeemed. It started out talking about redemption and the fact that none of us are perfect, but, you know, we can all find redemption. But then it starts talking about the fact that there are so many people out there who talk about redemption and talk about love and talk about, you know, God, but they don't act like they love each other. They don't agree with the way this person believes, so they hate them. And that's not the way we should be living. And that's what this song ended up becoming, is a song about if you really want to live the teachings that you're saying you're living by, then do it. And don't hate people just because they're Democrat or Republican or Muslim or Jewish or whatever. You know? So that song means a lot to me because I just, you know, I look around at the world today and I just see so many people hating each other. And it's something that we really need to work on as a society.
Redeemed by the blood of a man.
The Bo Stevens, live in Studio A. You'll find links to their albums and updated concert information at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. Well, that wraps up this week's show. I hope you dug the eclectic sampling of music from right here in the Triad, recorded live at WFDD. Our regular host and producer is David Ford, and our associate producer is Bethany Chafin. You'll find links to this week's show and an archive of shows past at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. We'd love to hear your comments or answer your questions, too. Email triadarts@wfu.edu. I'm technical producer and host Eddie Garcia. Thanks for listening to Triad Arts Weekend.